welcome to this reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. This is for Monday, March the 20th, 2023. I'm your reader at the microphone. My name is Andrew Haupt, filling in. Hope you're having a great afternoon as we get into the first day of spring, which that does start. You know when that starts? Later on this afternoon. So just about an hour and a half after this broadcast concludes, you can say hello to spring and goodbye to winter. Goodbye to the burr for another 9 months or so. Taking a look at some of the headlines here. Iowa House approves bill limiting some ESG practices. Local discount store opens. Surprise Den in Dyersville sells various items at bargain prices. And Piasta couple has right moves. These stories and more in this reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And we will first take a check, though, of the forecast here through today and the week. Well, for your Monday afternoon, expect partly sunny skies, winds out of the southwest gusting as high as 25 miles per hour, bringing us to a high near 49 degrees for your Monday afternoon. Tonight, Monday night, mostly cloudy, low around 35 degrees going into the early morning, light winds out of the south. Tuesday, tomorrow, a 50% chance of rain after 2 in the afternoon, winds from the south gusting as high as 25 miles per hour. That's a 50% chance of rain, new precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch possible, getting into those almost April showers. But for Tuesday, partly sunny conditions, then a high near 50. So however that all works out, partly sunny during the day, a high near 50 degrees. Tuesday night, rain likely, mainly between 8 p.m. and 2 a.m., mostly cloudy with a low around 39. Wednesday, a 30% chance of rain after 2 in the afternoon, mostly cloudy, a high near 53. Thursday, expect rain likely, mainly before 8 in the morning, mostly cloudy, a high near 45, a 70% chance of rain for your Thursday, so bring an umbrella. Then Friday, partly sunny, a high near 46. But again, for today, your Monday afternoon, partly sunny conditions, very nice, a high near 49 degrees. And breezy out there, so hang on to your hat. Getting into those headline stories here in this reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Monday, March the 20th, we start off with local discount store opens. Surprise Den in Dyersville sells various items at bargain prices. This story by Kaylee Reese. A mother and daughter have opened a discount store in Dyersville. Surprise Den opened March 12th at 635 16th Street Southeast next to Mexican restaurant Rio Blanco in the previous location of Natural Grains. Shelly Hess and her daughter, Michaela Villon, own the store. It's been a really exciting time, Vailon said. My mom inspired me with her passion for entrepreneurship and helped me open the store. This is our first venture. Vailon said they purchase items stores do not want anymore and put out new items every day. She added that they make sure products are high quality, but they offer full refunds if a customer is not satisfied. The store sells a wide variety of items, including electronics, kitchenware, baby items, furniture, toys, and pet items. That's why we call it the Surprise Den, Vailon said. You never know what you're going to find. There's a surprise for everyone here. The store also offers contemporary hot drinks and has a kids section with toys and treats where children can play while their parents shop. Surprise Den focuses on giving back to the community as well. Vailon said there is a little food pantry set up in the corner of the store for people to drop off and pick up items, and each Monday the store will donate 5% of all profits to a different organization. My mom loves talking to people, Vailon said. She always wanted to have a business her whole life, and now that I'm older, I said, well, why can't we do it? We fell in love with the concept of a retail store and toured different places in Iowa to pick and choose what we liked from their businesses, and we wanted to focus on specials and giving back. Surprise Den is open 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday, 1 to 5 p.m. Wednesday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Thursday, 1 to 6 p.m. Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Sunday and Saturday. The store can also be found on Facebook. Anyway, that's a Surprise Den. And it looks like they've got some good stuff in there. Looks like they got some coffee makers for sale. Well, how about that? Interesting stuff. Okay. So if you're looking for some stuff, maybe the Surprise Den is your place to go. Our next headline story, it's a state story. Iowa House approves bill limiting some ESG practices. Measure would ban state funds from being managed by companies that factor in the environmental, social, and governance impact of industries. This written by Benjamin Fisher. Iowa House Republicans recently passed a bill that would ban the state from contracting or banking with companies that consider environmental, social, and governance impacts when investing. In the past decade plus, many of the world's largest companies and investment firms increasingly have chosen not to invest money in sectors with which their clients are not comfortable. These sectors include those whose impacts to the environment or society are considered controversial, such as fossil fuels, industries such as mining or logging, large-scale agriculture, firearms, or pharmaceuticals. The practice has proven to be popular enough with clients that more major firms have adopted it over the years, and the entire industry has been created for scoring companies' environmental, social, and governance pursuits. Opponents, however, have described ESG investing as woke capitalism, contending that firms' focus should be on maximizing financial returns and that considering ESG impacts ends up putting a priority on political issues. If the bill being considered in Iowa becomes law, the state would become the sixth in the nation to ban and the second in the Midwest to ban state funds from being managed by companies that factor in ESG considerations. The bill could impact the state's management of retirement savings for thousands of public employees. The House bill has no fiscal note at the time it was being considered, so its possible financial impact is unclear. The bill passed 63-34 along party lines, with Republicans in favor and Democrats opposed. Iowa Representative Shannon Lundgren, Republican of Piasta, managed the bill on the House floor. After the vote, she pushed back on statements by Democrats that the bill was antithetical to capitalism because it would interfere with private business practices. In Iowa, they'll know that they can't use ESG, so they won't. They will solely go for fiduciary outcomes, she said. In Europe, for example, people want them to use ESG. That doesn't affect Iowa's public money, so we don't care what they do within their own company. We're not telling them they can't do it anywhere else. We're just saying in Iowa, with our funds, we don't want that process used. Iowa's consideration of the matter comes as Congress also recently passed a bill to overturn a U.S. Department of Labor rule allowing pension fund managers to consider ESG impacts when investing, with Republicans supporting the measure along with a few Democratic lawmakers. Joe Biden has said he plans to veto the bill, the first time he will have that used that power since taking office. Blocking ESG practices also has been a focus of Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds. Earlier this year, she issued a proposal to block its use in investing state money, which led to the bill that was passed by the House. Public officials are responsible for investing billions of dollars in retirement funds, pension funds, and other investment vehicles, read her accompanying statement. Those hard-earned dollars must not be sacrificed to advance progressive social causes like green energy or gun control at all costs. With the increased prevalence of ESG practices among investment firms, more must be done to protect Iowa's investments. Reynolds recently joined an alliance of 18 Republican-led state governors promising to block ESG consideration in their states. The bill passed by the Iowa House would ban state funds from being used to further environmental, social, governance, political, or ideological interest, and would keep state funds from investors who boycott fossil fuels, timber, mining, production agriculture, firearms, firearm parts, firearm accessories, or ammunition companies. I don't like including the list of originally, Lundgren said, but then I found pages of companies under those categories that were actually being boycotted. One reason considering ESG scores has become popular with major investment firms, though, is that it has benefited their clients financially. Bloomberg Professional Services, for instance, created a wing of its global company to advise investors and score companies' ESG practices. ESG is an essential decision-making tool for many companies, reads Bloomberg's website for its service. In that vein, Iowa Representative Amy Nielsen, Democrat of North Liberty, proposed an amendment to remove the list of industries and references to ESG and just said government funds must be invested wherever was best for returns on the investment. I don't want anything else considered, period, she said on the floor. The amendment failed along party lines. So pretty substantially then. Iowa Representative Lindsey James, Democrat of Dubuque, said the bill was just a political maneuver with potential for real-world negative impacts. That touches on Iowa public employees' retirement system, people's retirement, she said. That's not a place we want to go lightly. We need to think more about how this impacts people. The bill now heads to the Iowa Senate for consideration. All right, so that's your front page news there. Those two stories. And actually one more. Piasta couple has right moves. Love that lasts. Norma and Pat Kramer are celebrating their golden anniversary. This story by Michelle London. Dateline Piasta, Iowa. Norma Scace, spelled S-C-A-C-E, was a young woman from Warren, Illinois, when she arrived in Dubuque as a student at Capri Beauty School shortly after Hopkinton native Pat Kramer started his new job as a salesman at Wicks Lumber. We went through Norma's roommate and a cousin, I think, said Pat, now 70, of Piasta. We were all around the same age, and we would just hang out together. A few months after meeting, Pat asked Norma out on a date. My roommate was from Lamont, Iowa, said Norma Kramer, now age 70. She was having a party at her house there, and that was our first date. They became a couple after that, spending a lot of time with friends at the Circle on East Dubuque and East Dubuque, Illinois bar and dance hall. I thought he was very funny and nice, Norma said. Everybody loved him. He's more of a social bug. I'm kind of the calm one, and it just worked out between us. Pat loved Norma's level-headedness. For me, it was her beauty and low-key personality, he said. They were sitting on the front porch of Norma's apartment one evening in 1972 when they mutually agreed it was time to get married. We even went to Scourneck Jewelers at Kennedy Mall and picked the ring out together, Pat said. The couple married on March 31, 1973 at Westminster Presbyterian Church. Pat, who is Catholic, said his mother even convinced their priest to come to the church and bless the marriage. I don't know how she did it, he said. It was a different time then, very unusual for a Catholic to marry a non-Catholic, but she talked to him and he did it. Pat and Norma settled in Dubuque after a honeymoon to Kentucky and Michigan. They moved to Maquoketa before making another move to Decatur, Illinois, where they lived for 17 years and had their two children, Valerie Ball and Joe. The Kramers also have six grandchildren. In 2004, the Kramers built their dream home in Piasta, overlooking three wooded acres. Valerie of Dubuque said her parents made the move back to the area because they wanted her and her brother to be near family. I think it's really just a testament to their dedication to their family that they moved away and built a relationship without their family nearby, she said. But then they decided that moving back was the most important thing. They wanted to raise us near family, and this is where my dad's 11 brothers and sisters and parents live. While Pat worked in sales in the building supply industry, Norma worked for Dubuque Bank and Trust for 25 years, overseeing the bank's travel program. Through that program, the couple was able to travel extensively through Europe, Asia, and the U.S., including Alaska, Hawaii, Norway, Russia, the Panama Canal, Germany, China, Greece, Denmark, and Ireland. In 2010, the couple bought Rustic Barn Campground in Keeler, Wisconsin. It was a labor of love that they immensely enjoyed. They spent a lot of time refurbishing the campground and adding new features, including events and other programs. We were very successful with it, Pat said. We would camp quite a bit, and I saw how those places were managed, and I said, we can do that. We love that business. It was a big part of our lives. We got a lot of satisfaction out of it. Norma, who was still working at Dubuque Bank and Trust during the time they owned the campground, agreed. We love the business, she said. It was great, and it was just the two of us. Norma still works in the travel industry, having started her own custom travel business after retiring from the bank. Pat does maintenance at the Thunder Hills Golf Club. He also enjoys golfing and bowling, and Norma will often join him for a round of golf. The Kramers own a Corvette and are active members of the Key City Corvette Club in Dubuque. A couple of years ago, we went on a national caravan, Norma said. We met up with 600 Corvettes in Davenport, and then we went to Effingham, Illinois, and picked up some more. We ended up in Bowling Green, Kentucky, with about 10,000 other Corvettes. Valerie said her parents are a prime example of a great partnership. They are a great team, she said. Whatever they do, they decide on it together, and they complement each other. My mom gets everything ready, and my dad takes the reins. Valerie admitted she was a difficult young adult, but her parents never wavered in their support for her. I wasn't an easy person when I was younger, she said. They were both always there for me, both of them. When she got married, Valerie received what she calls a little Bible from her mother. My mom wrote all of these things to remember, she said. One of them was that you always need to have your partner's back no matter what, even if you disagree with them. You don't complain about them to other people. You don't speak badly about them. That's just always stuck with me. Pat and Norma both said having each other's backs has been a key ingredient in their successful marriage, along with trusting and respecting each other. We've done a lot of stuff together, Pat said. The list is huge, from trying to invent a few things to owning a campground. Always knowing we're going to be there for each other has made that pretty good. The Kramers are celebrating their golden anniversary with a Caribbean cruise and have been taking dance lessons at Adam's Dance Connection in Dubuque so they can enjoy the trip to its fullest. Even after 50 years together, Pat and Norma still enjoy the challenge of learning something new and learning it together. Now we know which way to move when we dance, Pat said. We work together very well. It has a picture of these two here from 1973, March 31st, the day of their marriage. Just a wonderful-looking couple. She's a very pretty lady in her day. That'd be Norma Kramer now. So good for you two. Congratulations. Move on now to page 2A here in the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. News in brief. Elementary school building in Maquoketa closed for 2 days following water leak. Dateline Maquoketa, Iowa. A Maquoketa school will be closed for 2 days following a significant water leak, officials said. Cardinal Elementary will not have classes today or Tuesday, March 21st, district officials announced Sunday afternoon. The cancellation comes after a pipe broke at the school Saturday morning, causing a significant leak, according to a letter to school families that was posted online. A company has been working to remove the water, clean carpets, and reduce moisture in the building since Saturday. Unfortunately, due to the size of the area that was damaged, it's going to take longer to dry out, and we need to bring in larger equipment, which does not allow for students to be in the building, Maquoketa Community School District Superintendent Tara Knotts wrote in the letter. School officials will monitor progress each day and will make a determination about the remainder of the week on a day-to-day basis, the letter states. Our staff is extremely saddened by this event, and we want nothing more than to have your children here with us, Knotts wrote. We'll be further discussing on Monday how we can support this lost learning time for your students. Top 10 most read stories of the past week is our next news brief section here. An article about a Joe Davies County, Illinois woman charged with homicide in connection with the death of a Southwest Wisconsin woman was the most read story of the past week on TelegraphHerald.com. Here are the 10 most read stories on the website from March 13th to Sunday. Number one, woman arrested on homicide charge in death of Southwest Wisconsin woman. Number two, Dubuque store employee embezzled more than $14,000 using lottery pull tab account. Number three, biz buzz, Ben store moves to new Dubuque location, new spa opens in Southwest Wisconsin, siblings open own businesses at same Dubuque location. Number four, Grammy-winning country artist to perform at Q Casino this summer. Number five, love that lasts. Maquoketa couple still on honeymoon after 70 years. Number six, Casey's accuses local manager of buying lottery ticket he knew was worth $100,000. Number seven, police, woman strikes boyfriend in head with rock in Dubuque. Number eight, Dubuque Multicultural Family Center director resigns. Former employees say facility understaffed. Number nine, documents, Delaware County woman charged for fatal ATV crash in 2021. And finally, 10, Dubuque County man sentenced to 5 years in prison for assaulting and injuring two women. Moving on to the police section now, the Dubuque and Dubuque County Sheriff's Departments reported Eduardo M. Morales Tellez, age 34, of 1789 University Avenue, was arrested at 12:08 a.m. Sunday at his residence on a charge of domestic assault with injuries. Sean L. Van Haften, age 51, a resident of the Hillcrest Family Services Residential Facility at 1160 Siple Road, was arrested at 9:25 p.m. Saturday at the facility on a charge of assault with injury. John J. Oglesby, age 30, of 1350 Nawata Street, was arrested at 9:20 a.m. Saturday in the area of West 5th and Delhi Streets on a charge of domestic assault with injury. Finally, Jason M. Schmidt, age 46, no permanent address, was arrested at 12:12 a.m. Saturday in the 3000 block of Pennsylvania Avenue on a warrant charging failure to comply with a sex offender registry. January's unemployment numbers reflect holidays end and mud season onset. Local rise is attributed to seasonal slowdowns in construction, retail, and hospitality industries. This story by Joshua Irvine. Local unemployment rates climbed across the area in January, a shift local officials attributed to seasonal slowdowns in construction, retail, and hospitality. In Dubuque County, the unemployment rate in January was 3.7%, up from December's revised estimate of 3%, but lower than January 2022, when the unemployment rate was 4%, according to recently released Iowa Workforce Development data. Other local counties likewise saw their unemployment rates tick upward from December to January, though trends were mixed when comparing the January data to January 2022 rates. Across Iowa, unemployment sat at 3% in January, even with December's revised figures in the state. The change in last year's unemployment figures compared to those previously reported by the Telegraph Herald is the result of a required annual review by the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics, officials said. Area economic officials said the increase in unemployment fell in line with seasonal hiring trends and largely was anticipated. After the holidays, there are a lot of seasonal jobs that are lost, said Ryan Semp, Vice President of Government and External Affairs at Dubuque Area Chamber of Commerce. It's very typical that you see that from December to January. The total number of jobs in the Dubuque metropolitan area declined by 300 from December to January, per an analysis by Greater Dubuque Development Corporation Director of Workforce Programming, Nick Hockenberry. That was actually a smaller increment compared to years past, when job numbers going back to 2017 declined by over 800 in January. He suggested employers could be choosing to retain employees who normally wouldn't be working this time of the year in light of statewide cuts to unemployment benefits. Hockenberry noted that Dubuque had over 600 fewer employment insurance recipients in January compared to January 2019, when unemployment also sat at 3.7%. Grant County, Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation Executive Director Ron Brisbois said he expected unemployment for the county to continue to rise in February, which he said was usually the county's high water mark for unemployment as construction grounds to a halt. He said demand for labor in the county remained hot, however, with several local businesses planning expansions. Even with the recent announcement of the planned closure of the Energizer plant in Fenimore, and the area employers already had reached out to his office in a preemptive bid to recruit workers from that plant. It looks like it will be another robust year in Grant County, Brisbois said. David Schmidt, regional director for Northwest Illinois Economic Development, attributed an increase in unemployment in Joe Davies County to the end of the holidays and the onset of quote-unquote mud season, when poor weather conditions lead to slowdowns in the county's hospitality and construction sectors. He projected unemployment numbers would improve with the spring, noting that Eagle Ridge Resort and Spa, one of the county's largest employers, already had begun advertising seasonal roles. If we can get out of mud season, we'll be in better shape, and that'll be in 2 weeks, Schmidt said. All right, next up, Delaware County Craft Show draws hundreds. 30 vendors offer their goods at the Spring 2023 Craft and Vendors Show in Manchester. This story by Eric Hogstrom. Dateline, Manchester, Iowa. Kim Corkery shifted boxes of brightly decorated homemade cookies into position on her table. It was a brief respite from the stream of people purchasing the baked goods. Corky of Manchester was one of 30 vendors at the Spring 2023 Craft and Vendors Show held Sunday at the Delaware County Fairgrounds. "This show is awesome," Corkery said. "I always do well." When the show started at 10 a.m., Corkery's table was filled with cookies. Boxes were stacked three high across the approximately four-foot-wide table. An hour later, boxes were only a single story high and only took up three-fourths of Corkery's table. The show goes until 2 p.m., but I'll be done by noon, she said, as another group of customers purchased boxes of the cookies decorated to resemble bunnies, Easter eggs, and carrots. I've been making cakes and cookies for 40 years, Corkery said. My sister started doing it, and then she got out of it, and I picked up where she left off. Organized by Shana McCune of Manchester, Sunday's show features baked goods, clothing, art pieces, and other items. Terry Ingwersen of Central City sold a variety of crocheted items. I've been crocheting for about 40 years, and I always gave my stuff away. Then my family insisted that I start selling my stuff, Ingwersen said. So here I am. Ingwersen also sold items at McCune's inaugural Manchester Craft Show in November. I've just started doing shows. This is only my second year, Ingwersen said. Ingwersen spent much of her time Sunday chatting with people, browsing two tables of handmade items. This show has a really good vibe, and it's one of the most fun shows I've done, she said. The people here are friendly, and the atmosphere is good. Ingwersen said she has received good feedback. I just had one lady tell me how beautiful my homemade towels were and that I should charge more for them, she said. McCune said she launched what she hopes to become a semi-annual series of Manchester craft shows last year to tap into unmet demand. Manchester doesn't really do a lot of these, McCune said. There was a lady who used to host them here, but she got out of doing it. McCune's show in November drew 300 people. We had really good foot traffic, she said. McCune expected to repeat that number on Sunday based upon responses to social media posts about the event. We had 600 people who RSVP'd for Sunday's show, and of that, we usually expect half to come, she said. McCune said she intends for the shows to be held several times per year. October 8th will be the next one, she said. We're going to do a Halloween-themed one, and the vendors will dress up and we'll have a best costume contest. We're going to let kids come up and then go trick-or-treating. Then we'll have another one November 12th for fall. All right, so that's all of everything on page 2A. Moving on now to page 3A, the Almanac. Today is Monday, March 20th, the 79th day of 2023. There are 286 days left in the year. On this date in 1413, England's king, Henry IV, died. He was succeeded by Henry V. In 1815, Napoleon Bonaparte returned to Paris after escaping his exile on Elba, beginning his 100 days rule. In 1852, Harriet Beecher Stowe's influential novel about slavery, Uncle Tom's Cabin, was first published in book form after being serialized. In 1854, the Republican Party of the United States was founded by slavery opponents at a schoolhouse in Ripon, Wisconsin. In 1922, the decommissioned USS Jupiter, converted into the first U.S. Navy aircraft carrier, was recommissioned as the USS Langley. In 1952, the U.S. Senate ratified 66-10, a security treaty with Japan. That ended a lot of post-war stuff there. Policies. In 1969, John Lennon married Yoko Ono in Gibraltar. In 1976, kidnapped newspaper heiress Patricia Hearst was convicted of armed robbery for her part in a San Francisco bank holdup carried out by the Symbionese Liberation Army. Hearst was sentenced to 7 years in prison. She was released after serving 22 months and was pardoned in 2001 by President Bill Clinton. In 1995, in Tokyo, 12 people were killed, more than 5,500 others sickened when packages containing the deadly chemical sarin were leaked on five separate subway trains to Shinrikyo cult members. In 1996, a jury in Los Angeles convicted Eric and Lyle Menendez of first-degree murder in the shotgun slayings of their wealthy parents. They were sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. In 2014, President Barack Obama ordered economic sanctions against nearly two dozen members of Russian President Vladimir Putin's inner circle and a major bank that provided them support, raising the stakes in an east-west showdown over Ukraine. In 2020, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker ordered residents to remain in their homes except for essential needs, joining similar efforts in California and New York to limit the spread of coronavirus. That did not work. All right, moving on now to our halfway point, because we are at the halfway point here in this reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald here on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of the blind and print disabled. I'm your reader filling in. My name is Andrew Haupt. If you have any comments on this or any other IRIS program, please give us a call at 515-243-6833. And now we turn to funeral service announcements, because there are no published full obituaries, which you'd normally hear on Mondays at the bottom of the hour. So we'll just bring these to you. Robert E. Bischoff, last name spelled B-I-S-C-H-O-F-F, of Garnavillo, Iowa. Visitation is 4 to 8 p.m. Friday, March 24th at the Morris Funeral Home in Garnavillo. Services are at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, March 25th at St. Peter's Lutheran Church in Garnavillo. From there we go to Kathleen A. Bowman, last name spelled B-O-W-M-A-N. Bellevue, Iowa, visitation 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. today. So that would have happened already. At the St. John Lutheran Church in Bellevue, also the funeral service was today at 10:30. Charlene R. Bradley of Dubuque, visitation 9 to 10:15 a.m. That was today. Mass of Christian burial, 10:30 a.m. this morning at the church, St. Patrick's Catholic Church. Joseph R. Burlidge of Worthington, Iowa, visitation was at 9 to 10 a.m. today. At the Kramer Funeral Home of Dyersville, the service was at 10:30 a.m. today at St. Paul Catholic Church in Worthington. Beverly Burr of Lancaster, Wisconsin, visitation was 9 to 11 a.m. It is 9 to 11 a.m. on Wednesday, March 22nd, this week. Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory, Lancaster, services are at 11 a.m. Wednesday at the funeral home. Mary P. Grebe of Galena, Illinois, service at 11 a.m. Saturday, March 25th at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Galena. Robert L. Hingtgen of East Dubuque, Illinois, visitation 4 to 7 p.m. with parish scripture service at 3:30 p.m. today. So that is next hour, about an hour from now, at the Miller Funeral Home of East Dubuque. Mass of Christian burial is at 10 a.m. Tuesday, tomorrow, March 21st, at St. Raphael Cathedral. June A. Kemmler of Dubuque, service is at 4:30 p.m., followed by visitation until 7 p.m. today at the Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home located at 3860 Asbury Road. Hazel R. Knebel of Dubuque, service 11 a.m. Saturday, April 1st at St. Mary's Catholic Church in East Dubuque, Illinois. From there we go to Cecilia Luke of Dyersville, Iowa, visitation 2 to 8 p.m. today. So going on now at the Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville. Service is Tuesday, March 21st at St. Francis Xavier Basilica in Dyersville. There you go to Eugene J. Mulgrew of East Dubuque, Illinois. Visitation 9:45 to 10:15 a.m. today at St. Matthew Catholic Church in Shoalsburg, Wisconsin. Mass of Christian burial was at 10:30 this morning. Irvin M. Nauman of Altoona, Iowa. Visitation 9 to 10:30 a.m. Saturday, March 25th at St. Anthony Catholic Church. Mass of Christian burial, 10:30 a.m. Saturday at the church. Dennis R. Pickle, last name spelled P-I-C-K-E-L, of Dubuque. Visitation 9 to 11 a.m. Monday, March 27th, a week from now at St. Patrick's Catholic Church. Mass of Christian burial, 11 a.m. March 27th at the church. Judith A. Schaffer, last name spelled, or maybe Schaffer, S-H-A-F-F-E-R, of Plattsville, Wisconsin. Visitation 9 to 10:45 p.m. Saturday, March 25th at St. Joseph the Worker Catholic Church. Mass of Christian burial, 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Finally, Coletta C. Wegman of Bloomington, Wisconsin. Visitation 1 to 3 p.m. Saturday, March 25th, Route 35, Pub and Pizza of Bloomington. All right. That does it for our funeral announcements. Deaths elsewhere. Lance Reddick of New York. Lance Reddick, a character actor who specialized in intense, icy, and possibly sinister authority figures on TV and film, including The Wire, Fringe, and the John Wick franchise, has died. He was 60. Reddick died suddenly Friday morning, his publicist Mia Hansen said in a statement. attributing his death to natural causes. No further details were provided. That's an AP blip about that. Well, it's the halfway point. We're past that anyway, so we're moving on to the opinion section now in this reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Monday, March the 20th. Other view for the Telegraph Herald is by Scott Reeder. A fast note about what Lent means. Having married a Catholic and now being the only Protestant in a household of six, I've learned a few things in the past 20 years. One of those things I've learned is how to bake really good macaroni and cheese during Lent. Like many families, we don't eat meat on Ash Wednesday and the following Fridays leading up to Easter. A couple of decades ago, I thought these fasts were silly and overly legalistic. In fact, early in our marriage, I had no problem eating a steak while my wife and kids munched on pasta. To her credit, my wife never said anything to me about it. My kids, on the other hand, eyed me with an envy bordering on irritation. But as I've aged and learned more, I've changed my view. It's a beautiful tradition that can be honoring to God if done not out of obligation, but a desire to commemorate. The problem is so many people don't fully understand the spiritual practice of fasting. Growing up Protestant, I never heard a pastor extol the virtues of even a partial fast. According to abstinence rules within the Catholic Church, meat includes flesh from warm-blooded animals and birds. Fish and other seafood are okay to eat on Lenten Fridays. There are exceptions. In the New Orleans diocese, it's permissible to eat alligator, and a Detroit muskrat can be eaten on a Lenten Friday entree. I'm not particularly keen on trying either exception. Before Vatican II, Catholics abstained from meat on almost all Fridays throughout the year. Even though I grew up post-Vatican II, my best friend's family continued the year-round practice. When I ate at the Reeds on Fridays, on good days it was cheese pizza, on bad ones, pea soup. Being a rather inquisitive child, I asked my friend's dad just why they didn't eat most types of meat on Fridays. He gave me a rather long explanation about a pope centuries ago wanting to help fishermen out. Because my dad was a hog farmer, my 10-year-old self worried that the Pope had it in for folks like us. But no, that isn't the case. While it is an interesting, often repeated fable within the church, it also happens to be nonsense. Another explanation I've been told by some folks of a more progressive bent is that chickens, hogs, and cattle eat grain, so if Catholics abstain from eating their flesh, more food will be available for hungry people. It's a nice thought, but it also doesn't hold up to scrutiny. Modern aquaculture feeds soy, corn, and rice to farm-raised fish, and some cattle, goats, and sheep eat only grass. I'm no theologian, so I asked the Springfield, Illinois Bishop Thomas Paprocki to explain the practice. We don't have this visible presence right in front of us where we can actually see and talk to Jesus the way his disciples did, he said. So there is that longing in our hearts to be with Christ, to be present with him. And fasting, in a way, is analogous to that. When we're fasting, we get hungry. Hunger is a longing for food. We long to be with Christ. We look forward to the day when we'll be with Christ in his kingdom. But for the time being, we have to grow in the sense of patiently awaiting that day. That makes sense, and it's something I'll be thinking about as I participate in the partial fast with my family this year. I occasionally hear folks poo-poo the practice. They'll say a partial fast doesn't amount to much. This sort of disparagement of another's religious practice is perplexing. After all, why should someone care what someone else is giving up? And let's be honest, most of the folks critical of this practice are not giving up anything themselves. In a self-centered age, it's refreshing to see others sacrificing to remember something greater than themselves. Isn't that the meaning of Lent? All right, well, that's written by Reeder, who's a staff writer for Illinois Times and can be reached at SREEDER@IllinoisTimes.com. Okay, moving on now to the sports section. Our first story, shooting for Seattle. Clark Cisnano lead Iowa to ninth Sweet 16 bid in school history. A story by John Bowenkamp of the Associated Press, Dateline Iowa City. Caitlin Clark admits she didn't have her best game, but it was enough to get Iowa to the Sweet 16. The unanimous AP All-American had 22 points and 12 assists to help the Hawkeyes defeat Georgia 74-66 in a second-round women's NCAA tournament game Sunday. Clark was held scoreless for 13 minutes in the first half, but scored 14 second-half points as the Hawkeyes 28-6, the number two seed in Seattle Region 4, finally shook off the 10th-seeded Lady Bulldogs. She made just 6 of 17 shots, but either scored or assisted on 30 of Iowa's 33 second-half points. I think anytime you're one of the 16 teams who get to keep playing basketball, it's pretty special, Clark said. But it wasn't a huge party or celebration in the locker room. This wasn't our goal. It's one of the steps for reaching our goal, but it's not the end-all, be-all for us. Clark knew she could have hit more shots, but was happy with the win. I probably could have made a couple of more shots, she said. I thought I had at least open threes that usually go down for me, but sometimes that happens. Georgia coach Katie Abrahamson Henderson thought they did a good job containing Clark. She averages 27 points a game. That's a lot. I think we did a great job on her, Abrahamson Henderson said. Monica Cisnano had 20 points, Gabby Marshall added 15 points, and McKenna Warnock had 14 for Iowa, which erased the memory of last season's second-round home loss to number 10 seed Creighton. Georgia got within 68-66 on a three-pointer from Audrey Warren with 2 minutes and 17 seconds left in the game, but the Lady Bulldogs would not score again, committing 3 straight turnovers and missing a layup. We made a lot of runs, Abrahamson Henderson said. I know everything is going to be about Iowa right now, but my team is really good. They are really good. We came in here, we fought like crazy. We were the underdogs, but there was no underdog here today. Iowa led by as much as 10 points in the first half behind Marshall and Warnock, who combined for 5 three-pointers to open the second quarter. But a 14-3 run by the Lady Bulldogs gave them a 35-34 lead, and it took a late surge to give the Hawkeyes a 41-40 halftime lead. Brittany Smith and Javen Nicholson each had 12 points for Georgia. Iowa plays the winner of Duke, Colorado. Stolke out. Iowa was without freshman forward Hannah Stolke. Stolke, the Big Ten's sixth player of the year, suffered an injured ankle in practice on Saturday. She literally hurt her ankle with about 3 minutes left in practice, Bluter said. Stolke scored 14 points, making all 5 of her shots, in Friday's 93-45 first-round win over southeastern Louisiana. She averages 7 points and 4.2 rebounds. Bluter said she expects Stolke to be available next weekend in the regional semifinal. Big picture. Georgia. The Lady Bulldogs fell short of their first Sweet 16 appearance since 2013, but they finished strong in Abrahamson Henderson's first season as head coach. Georgia had won 9 of their 12 games coming into Sunday's game. We had 2 really good teams on the floor today, Abrahamson Henderson said, and one of them was Georgia for sure. Iowa. The Hawkeyes were held 13 points under their national best average of 87.8 points, but came up with enough offense against Georgia's zone defense, which forced 17 Iowa turnovers. In college basketball, Wisconsin 75, Liberty 71. Hepburn and Wisconsin nip Liberty. Badgers advanced to quarterfinals of NIT behind career-high day. This story by the Associated Press, Dateline Madison, Wisconsin, where Chucky Hepburn led Wisconsin with 27 points and Max Klesmit secured the victory with a layup with 42 seconds left as the Badgers knocked off Liberty 75-71 in front of 10,436 fans at the Kohl Center on Sunday afternoon in the second round of the National Invitation Tournament. We're still in it to win it, Hepburn said. March Madness or NIT, we're in it to play. Hepburn scored his career-high 27 points by shooting 9-for-20 from the floor, and he made a career-best 9 free throws for the Badgers, 19-14. Chucky obviously had a great game, Wisconsin's Stephen Crowell said. He was getting to the line. We just thought he could get down low just because their guards were a little smaller. Obviously, he executed. Klesmit scored all 7 of his points in the final 2 minutes and 11 seconds of the game to help the Badgers survive. His three-pointer with 2 minutes and 11 seconds remaining gave Wisconsin a 68-67 lead, and he added another bucket on a drive with 42.7 seconds to play to put the Badgers back ahead 72-71. His 2 free throws with 6 seconds remaining concluded the scoring. He had some big buckets for us down the stretch, Hepburn said. We all have trust in him. We all have confidence in him. We all believe in him. Tyler Wall added 16 points while shooting 5 of 6 from the field and 6 for 7 from the line, and he also had 6 rebounds. Crowell had 14 points and went 7 of 9 from the field. Wall scored a team-high 14 points for Wisconsin in the second half. The Badgers, 19-14, won consecutive games for the first time since December 30th and January 3rd to advance to the quarterfinal round Tuesday or Wednesday against top-seeded Oregon. The Flames, 27-9, were led by Darius McGee, who recorded 31 points, 6 rebounds, and 4 assists in his final collegiate game. The 5'9 McGee, who has scored at least 30 points in 5 games this season, is the program's all-time leading scorer with 2,685 career points. Liberty also got 16 points from Kyle Rode. In addition, Shiloh Robinson finished with 9 points. Rode missed a 3-pointer with the Badgers leading 72-71. We're taught, if it is a great shot for you, we'll live with the result either way, Rhodes said. So, 100%, take it all day. All right. Moving on, in other news now, United States Hockey League, Saints deliver character effort against East leaders. Kirk McDonald witnessed this kind of scenario all the time while playing professional and later coaching the Reading Royals in the ECHL. The Dubuque Fighting Saints dropped a 3-2 decision to the Chicago Steel on Saturday night in Geneva, Illinois, despite playing their third game in 3 days against a team playing for the first time this weekend. And at times, you wouldn't have known the Saints had a distinct disadvantage in freshness after splitting a 2-game set with Youngstown on Thursday and Friday. "I'm so proud of the guys," said McDonald, the first-year Saints coach. "I know these games very well. When you're at the end of a 3-3 or a 4-5, and the other team is sitting, waiting for you, it's almost always a guaranteed 6-1 or 7-1 loss, no matter the talent level of the teams. For us to be down 2-0 in the third period and have a chance to win it, it really speaks to the character in our room. It's a loss, but I really hope our guys can take a lot away from this. There were a lot of really good things to come from this." The USHL Eastern Conference leading Steel beat Dubuque for the first time in 4 meetings between the teams this season. They play twice more, a home and home on April 14th and 15th. The Saints also have one more, 3-3 remaining, April 6th at home against Muskegon and April 7th and 8th in a home and home with Madison. "Obviously, it's a tough night when it's your third game and 3 nights you're playing a fresh team," Saints forward Max Montes said. "The legs are not going to be there, but it's still important for us to work as hard as we can every single night. Things didn't go our way tonight, but our team effort was amazing. It shows what kind of guys we have in the room. We take a lot of pride in being conditioned and competing. We had our chances to win. We know we can beat that team when we're fresh, so this was a big confidence booster for us." Dubuque, 26-19 and 5-1 in the conference, missed an opportunity to break a tie with Green Bay for fourth place in the Eastern Conference. The Gamblers dropped a 7-3 decision to USA Hockey's National Team Development Program U-17 squad on Saturday. Dubuque's recent trend of allowing 2 goals in quick succession continued early in the opening period. During a 4-on-4 sequence, Jack Harvey and Mac Celebrini scored goals 5 seconds apart to give the Steel a 2-0 lead on goaltender Paxton Geisel. Harvey's 30th goal of the season came at 5:07, and Celebrini added to the USHL lead with his 41st of the season in the next entry into the Saints' zone. The Steel appeared to take a 3-0 lead at the 12:48 mark, but the on-ice officials waved off the goal, ruling Michael Emerson redirected a Reed Kahn shot with a stick above the crossbar. In the final minute of the period, Geisel made an acrobatic save to deny Celebrini and keep the deficit at 2. The Saints ended the shutout bid of goalie Christian Manns just 90 seconds into the third period after Jake Sondriel drew a tripping penalty on Chicago's Nolan Joyce. Just 7 seconds later, Montes potted his 20th goal of the season following a couple of fortunate bounces. Max Burkholder's pass hit the skate of penalty killer Graydon Slipik in the slot and bounced to Owen Michaels in between the circles. Michaels whiffed on the shot, which threw Mans off his ankle, and was the puck found Montez on the back door for an easy tap in. Chicago executed a tic-tac-toe passing sequence at the 9-minute 17-second mark for the eventual game-winning goal. Harvey found a wide-open net on the back door after a slick pass from Moldenhauer from between the circles. But Ryan St. Louis got that goal back just 49 seconds later to account for the final margin. Mikey Burchill looked to make a play, but the puck deflected off a Chicago defender's skate to spring St. Louis for a breakaway. The lefty shooting St. Louis decked Mans down with his forehand and tucked a backhander into the net for his team-leading 21st goal of the season. The Saints had another power play opportunity with 5 minutes and 46 seconds remaining, but couldn't convert. McDonald also pulled Geisel for a sixth attacker late, but the steal held firm. Dubuque host USA Hockey's National Team Development Program U17 Team Friday and Saturday night on Saint for Life weekend. All right, from the Wisconsin and Illinois section. News in brief. Chicago officer run over, man charged with attempted murder. Dateline Chicago, Illinois. A man faces a charge of attempted murder after backing over a Chicago police officer with his car, police said Sunday. Officers on Friday night saw a vehicle wanted in connection with an aggravated battery of an officer earlier in the month and attempted to pull a vehicle over, Chicago police said. Tej Z. Mullins, age 23, of Chicago, put the car in reverse and ran over a 39-year-old officer who was approaching on foot, police said. Another officer fired his weapon, but no one was struck, police said. Mullins fled and was arrested a short time later, according to police. He faces one count of attempted first-degree murder, two counts of aggravated assault to a peace officer, and fleeing from a peace officer. The injured officer was taken to a nearby hospital with a broken leg, police said. The officer was listed in good condition. More news from Chicago. Four shot in Chicago restaurant Saturday night, police say. Chicago police responded to a shooting at a South Shore restaurant where three men and one woman were shot Saturday night. According to the police's preliminary investigation, three armed men exited a vehicle, walked up to the restaurant, and opened fire from outside around 9 p.m. Police were seen outside of Kennedy Fish and Chicken at 2425 East 72nd Street. A 29-year-old male was shot in the thigh and sent to the University of Chicago Medical Center. A 32-year-old male was shot in the leg and was sent to Jackson Park Hospital. A 29-year-old male was shot in the leg and was sent to U Chicago. A 29-year-old female was grazed at the ear and was sent to U Chicago. Police said the victims were listed in good condition and no one is in custody for the shooting. A prior fatal shooting took place outside of Kennedy Fish and Chicken in March 2016. Brian Barlow, age 31, was shot dead outside of the restaurant. Well, moving close to time here, let's take one more check of the forecast for the area. For this afternoon, you can expect partly sunny conditions, a high near 49 degrees for your Monday afternoon here in Dubuque. Southwest winds up to 25 miles per hour. But again, mostly cloudy with some sunshine, a high 49. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a low around 35. Winds very mild out of the south. Tuesday, partly sunny, a high near 51. Tuesday night, rain likely, mainly between 7 p.m. and 1 a.m. Mostly cloudy with a low around 39 degrees. Winds from the south gusting as high as 25. Wednesday, a 30% chance of rain after 1 p.m. Mostly cloudy with a high near 53. Wednesday night, more rain likely, mostly cloudy, a low around 38. Thursday, a 30% chance of rain before 1 in the afternoon, mostly cloudy, a high near 45. Thursday night, mostly cloudy, a low around 30. Friday, partly sunny, a high near 46. Into the weekend, partly sunny on Saturday with a high near 51. And Sunday, a 40% chance of rain, partly sunny with a high near 52. And that's been this reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald here on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. I'm your reader. My name is Andrew Halp. This is the Monday, March 20th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. Thank you so much for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. Have a great day. Thank you so much for listening, and straight ahead.